Into the Weird, Episode 38, Mad Mordo 2, The Dream Warrior.
Welcome to Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Billy D, and alongside me is my co-host, Herman Lowe. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Billy, man, I can't complain. I'm fine. I feel good, except for the fact that I'm sitting here in the nightmare realm, drinking some, sipping a cup of chamomile tea with the man himself, Nightmare.
Oh man,
he's soon gonna feature prominently in upcoming issues, so shout out to our old buddy Grant. His favorite Doctor Strange villain, Nightmare, is gonna show up again. Well, he briefly did show up in the previous discussion we had concerning Mr. Stephen Strange, but I'm excited, Billy, because we're back on our Sorcerer Supreme kick, and we've got a fantastic couple of issues that we're gonna focus on. But first, how have you been, man?
I've been great. I feel like I've been fighting multiple versions of myself lately. No, I'm just teasing.
The drunken Past Billy. Versions. The power bad Billy. The apprentice.
No, just teasing there. No, everything's going cool, man. Everything's great. You know, just loving life right now. You and I have been doing a lot of podcasting and having a lot of fun.
Yeah, we got through Halloween. And this time we actually met all our goals. As our listeners might remember, you weirdos out there, we missed a Halloween episode last year that we were promising to release after our Halloween special, in addition to what we already did in 2020 for Halloween. And then I reclaimed that episode we did and then released it earlier this year on the halfway mark to October. So the Lost Halloween. So this time around, nothing of that happened. You know, we don't have any Lost Halloween episodes to air for next year unless we record one. and we made our goals. I'm pretty proud of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a lot going on between, you know, Into the Weird and Patreons and All-Star Squadron, Star Rocket Radio, Long Buck of Darkness, Magazines of Monsters. We got a lot on our plate. So the fact that we got everything out and pretty much on time, we're proud of that fact.
Yeah, it's impressive, man. But you know, we're with Into the Weird, we're going to keep continuing. Now, I do have to mention something, Billy. This is War Comics Month. So you and I might have to work in on the next episode of Into the Weird. We might have to take that into account and work in some Bronze Age Marvel comics related to war and such. I don't think we've ever done that before. We've talked about that in the past, but War Comics Month, a very important time for us. I mean, both of us are huge fans of war comics, but it's more from the DC side, and for me, it's more from the British comic publishing side. I read a lot of British war comics when I was a kid, so. But, you know, with Marvel, there's definitely some war comics out there. It doesn't even have to be a comic with war in the title. It could be related to a story of a Marvel character stuck in war. We definitely have to think about that, dude. So we got to start brainstorming.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We should. We should do it.
We've just given our weird listeners an insight into how far ahead we planned. not very far.
Well, sometimes we do. And then we always have the doc every other episode, you know, unless it's around Halloween. So we always have that plan.
That's right. And speaking about the doc, mm-hmm. specifically the issues we'll be doing this time around is issue 11 and 12 of Volume 2 of Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. And as you might remember, guys and gals out there, last time around, the Doc was met with the threat of Eternity. Eternity literally just showed up on Bleecker Street, it seemed to be. But actually, he showed up, you know, well, the entire Earth could see him, right? He Galactus style, he just threatened the Earth and then... Doctor Strange, mercifully, to preserve our sanity, he cast a spell that made everything just seem normal. So it was just him and Eternity conversing. And Eternity just gave us an ultimatum. Or not an ultimatum. He gave us a deadline saying that the Earth is doomed. You guys are toast. Say your goodbyes. And then the Doc said, no, as the Sorcerer Supreme, he's going to challenge that. And Eternity seemed to have accepted the challenge. And now Doctor Strange is representing humanity in the ultimate game of existence versus the threat of non-existence. So it's him versus Eternity. And that's why, in fact, the trade paperback collection that came out recently that chronicles all these issues, right, Billy, is called Doctor Strange Alone Against Eternity.
Right.
So it's going to be a pretty spectacular ride. But unfortunately, listeners, it's only going to culminate in our next Doctor Strange episode in December. That's where we have the final issue. Issue 13 wraps up this saga. Yeah, so Billy, we're going to have to decide, because are we going to do 13 as a standalone issue? Because the next storyline that hits features one of our favorite horror-esque Marvel characters. So I don't know if we want to do that in one go, but we'll talk about that off mic. Mm. We won't bore our listeners with these details. Still, I'm going to give some specs on these two issues, Billy, and then I'm going to do the first synopsis. You're going to do the synopsis for issue 12, and then we roll like that. Mm-hmm. All right, so Doctor Strange, issue 11, cover by Gene Colan and inked by Frank Giacoya. Title of the story is Shadow Play. And there's writer, of course, Steve Englehart, penciler, Gene Colan, inked by Tom Palmer and colored, lettered by John Constanza. And you can find this in the trade paperback I mentioned, Alone Against Eternity, which was released this year. And then the Marvel Masterworks Volume 6 of Doctor Strange. You can also find this in the Essential Doctor Strange Volume 3. Or you can buy the original issue like you and I managed to do, right, Billy?
Oh, yeah.
And issue 12 is the same, except the cover, again penciled by Colan, was inked by Tom Palmer. Mm-hmm. And then lettered by Tom Orkowski instead of John Constanza. Yeah. And then the rest of the creator credits are basically the same. All edited by Marf Wolfman, of course. And then the title of the second issue, which you'll be giving the synopsis for, is Final Curtain. Very ominous titles here, right, Billy? Shadow Play, horror, you know, centric title there. And then you've got this Final Curtain, which is scary and apocalyptic. All right. So, Billy, first, before I give the synopsis, I want to ask you, what's your history with these two issues? Did you read them all in one go, or did you collect them sporadically to fill up the storyline?
I'm pretty sure I got these sporadically just to kind of fill up. For a long time, I had a lot of Doctor Strange comics from like 20 on. And then, you know, it took a little bit more searching and cash to get the first, you know, 19 or 20, whatever. But I eventually got them all. But yeah, I definitely had, you know, some spotty issues from 1 to 20 there for a long time that I had to piece things together as I went along. But when I got these two, especially 11... You know, like, you know, you and I will talk about 11. The cover is very, very interesting. They're both great covers, but 11's a little more interesting than 12, I would think. It's just for what it shows.
Yeah. I understand what you mean. Yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, memory might be playing tricks on me here because it was ages ago. But, you know, I picked up most of my Doctor Strange comics in the early 80s. You know, the 1970s run, of course. And then you know, the volume two was still running at the time. So eventually I got to the Roger Stearns and the Chris Claremont issues on this, on the spinner racks. But the ones that I picked up, the earlier ones, that was like 7 or 8 years before I started reading comics old, those ones I picked up at the secondhand bookstore that I used to frequent. And it seemed that someone had just sold their chunk of Doctor Strange comics. So I got this chunk of Strange ones. And if I'm not mistaken, these comics were in there. And they contained, I think, issue 7 up to issue 20 or 21. Mm. You know, it was a chunk of Doctor Strange comics, yes. And yeah, they were in horrible condition, I should add. And I still have them. And I never, you know, double dipped and went back to buy better copies. I just opted for the essentials or for the masterworks, you know, which I'm very happy with. But, you know, then when I read them as a kid, I was like maybe 6 or 7 years old. I loved the visuals, but I didn't know what the hell was happening in the story. I mean, then Doctor Strange is blasting Eternity, then he's blasting Mordo, then he's fighting Nightmare, then he's having a palaver with the Ancient One. I really didn't understand it at all. It's only with subsequent rereadings that I finally got to it. So now this is where we really, you know, pay dividends to the name of this podcast, Billy, Into the Weird. Because if this isn't, you know, crazy out the wazoo, then I don't know what is, because these two comics go absolutely insane. So for you folks out there who might have seen Billy's tweet on Twitter where you teased this episode, there you have an inkling of that. You know, all I can say is Richard Nixon. I'm not a crook.
he's here, sort of.
And again, we're left wondering, right, Billy, what was Engelhard smoking here? What was he imbibing? I don't know. Anyway, we'll get to that once we get an interview with him, hopefully.
But please.
He'll reveal his secrets. All right, so the synopsis for Doctor Strange, Issue 11, Volume 2, is as follows. Get ready, because like I mentioned, things are going to get cranked up on the weirdometer, if we can call it that over here. Okay. It's Stephen Strange versus Eternity as the Sorcerer Supreme finds himself plunged into a realm of shadows by his omnipotent opponent. The shadows soon take shape to reveal his four separate selves: the power-mad Doctor, the Drunk, the Apprentice, and the Masked Man of Mystery. Informed by Eternity that he must confront these mirror entities in order to know himself, Stephen surges onwards. Shadows morph into a new realm, an estate where wealthy and powerful Stevens gather, led by Tricky Dick Stephen, sporting a Nixon mask, of course. Bereft of his magic, Stephen is overcome and thrown in a dungeon with nothing but Drunk Stephen for company. Exiting through an escape tunnel Drunk Stephen had been digging, he infiltrates the crowd of Stevens just as Nixon Strange announces the coming of Edgar Allan Poe's Red Death, preventing everyone's demise by banishing the Red Death with the Eye of Agamotto. Stephen holds court with Eternity and argues the rules of the obscure game he is involved in, only to be transported once more to a new realm, a place that appears to be the Himalayas and the Temple of the Ancient One, who is alive and well and in full teaching mode. Heads up, Steve, school's in session. Meanwhile, Clea and Stephen's mystical house guests discover Mad Baron Mordo's absence from the Sanctum Sanctorum. While they ponder this mystery, Mordo's astral form has made contact with a mind as insane as his own, that of the aged Genghis. To be continued.
Okay. Yeah, or as Engelhart puts it, what does he say? The end of the world.
Yeah, the literal end of the world.
Yeah, I'm thinking, didn't you just do this a few issues ago, man? But
he did. But that was the that was the destruction and reconstruction of the world. It's going to recur. I'm not saying Steve ran out of ideas here, but there was a theme that he was in love with, and he felt he didn't get the most out of it the first time around, right, Billy? So he's rehashing that. But this time it's done in a suitably different fashion, and I'd say almost even more shocking than the first time around, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I agree. What did you think, big picture? What was this issue? Before we talk covers, Sal, what was your impression of everything? The cover, the story, everything.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever wish you could sip cocktails and discuss great books with your friends while hanging out in a rundown piano bar? Here on the Literary Guys podcast, that's what we do. I'm Dr. Gordon McCallan.
And I'm author Zachary Kellyan. Each month, we discuss books from two different views of modern masculinity.
From both a gay
and a straight perspective.
From To Kill a Mockingbird
to future governors in the jungle trying to kill a predator. We welcome everyone to join our conversation on the good and toxic of what literature and pop culture have to say about masculinity. So pour yourself a drink and join us now for Season 3.
Literary Guys. That's G-U-I-S-E. LiteraryGuys.com.
I see what you did there.
Good. Love it. I mean, you know, I kind of like got a little sour when Engelhart and Brunner stopped, you know, their collaboration and Engelhart forged on. But again, these are really, really good. They're right up there, too. I mean, obviously, Colin, you know, he's my favorite artist, so I'm always going to praise him, you know, especially with Palmer inking him. But I love Engelhart's exposition in this one and his captions. It was some really good, you know, it wasn't as, you know, long-winded sometimes with the, you know, purple prose as he can be, but there was still some of it here and there, and I love it. That's something I always love about, you know, Engelhart and, you know, McGregor, some of the Bronze Age stalwarts. I think they did it real well. I really like that about it for sure. And then the Doc being powerless, I mean, that really isn't new. You know, it wasn't a new theme there. That was kind of like, well, but it's always like a little bit different of an angle with Engelhart when he does rehash something. Like you said, when we will eventually get to the end of the world kind of thing, it's way different than the other time he did it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of old tropes from the Doctor Strange comics from previous years that show up, but there's also a lot of new things being introduced. And this time around, mm-hmm. sort of Stephen versus Stephen almost, right? It's him confronting his mm-hmm. disparate selves, and his psyche is the enemy. And Eternity, yeah. He gives a reason for that later on in the issue. He says that he can't actually dispossess Stephen of his magic. That's Stephen doing that to himself this time around. You know what I mean? Because he's confronting these images of himself, which he thought he had overcome, but which are still very much there, embedded in his persona, in his very being. So because of that, you know, when he confronts them, he needs to confront them as just a man, you know, in some cases. Right. And then when it gets to the personas where he's already the Sorcerer Supreme, of course, then his magic is there in full force. But it's not Eternity doing that to him. It's Stephen himself. So this is Eternity's point, right, Billy? He says humanity is flawed because humans are always their own worst enemy. And in the case of Stephen, that's very much true. Although Stephen you know, disproves that at the end when the story culminates. You know, he does overcome that fact. And he's already overcome some of these evil personas in the past. And that's why he can easily overcome them again. But Eternity says, yeah, this is just a prelude to what's coming. This is just to prepare you, you know, sort of like mini tests before the actual exam. And it works for me. It works. Okay, so Billy, let's talk covers, man. These covers are some of my absolute favorites. What do you think about the cover to issue 11?
I think it's awesome. I mean, anytime I look for credits, it always says Gene Colan. And then, like you said, Frank Giacquoi is anchor. But I have seen somebody, and I can't remember who it was. I'll try to remember at some point here. But I have seen somebody point out that some of the images of Steven on the cover, you know, not where he's in his Doctor Strange, you know, persona here, but the ones in the background, they have pointed out like that some of them don't look very Colan-esque. And I tend to agree, like the one on the far right, it definitely does look like more of a Marie Severin Doctor Strange, you know, after the Ditko, the post-Ditko, and then the one in the far left with the broken bottle doesn't really look very much Colan in the face either. But I don't know, but it's still great. I love those four versions of him looming.
to
kill him.
Now I've got a theory about that. I think that's intentional on Colan's part. Because he was look at the mask Doctor Strange. That is the way Colan drew him when Roy Thomas was writing him. That's mm-hmm. the way Colan drew Doctor Strange back then, but it doesn't mesh with his style in the issue. in this very issue. You know, it's only on the cover.
Yeah.
So this is sort of him almost, you know, referencing the old style that he used to have. Although Colin's style didn't change much, you know, but he definitely developed as he went through the 70s.
And
this was from the 60s. Yeah, so, I mean, and then you've got the first two Stephen Stranges, which look very similar to Colin faces, you know. And then, like you said, the next two is a little bit weird, but especially the one on the far right. I think that might have been intentional, because look at the difference in the hairstyle from that image.
Yeah.
You know, Colin never drew Stephen's hair like that. It's more slick, more smooth back. It's almost, like he was also channeling a little bit of Ditko. Like, so interesting. It could be intentional. Now, I love this cover because it's got that misty effect that Colin is known for. Almost like these images are coalescing from the ether or the mists of Stephen's mind, the fog that enshrouds his mind at this time, placed there by eternity. And then some of them are coalescing into these Stephens. Now, the drunken Stephen is menacing him with a broken bottle. Very That's appropriate, great. Right? Like he's ready to get it on in a bar fight. The power-mad Dr. Stephen is menacing him with a scalpel. Great.
I know. It looks a little bit like a batarang there, or a boomerang.
Oh, almost, yeah.
That's my only gripe about the cover. That's it. Otherwise, I love it. I'm like, it doesn't look like a scalpel.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a scalpel. For me, the first thing that came to mind was one of Moon Knight's crescent darts.
Something like that.
What the hell? And then you have, you know, the masked Steven, Man of Mystery.
Yes.
He's got Namor eyebrows. And you know, Steven does have kind of Namor eyebrows in any case, but you know, that's some intense eyebrows. And think about it, eyebrows on a mask. Okay, now it makes sense because, as we all know, that is not actually a mask, right? That's
correct.
A mystical projection.
That's his head.
That's his head. That's his actual head. And then, of course, the Steven on the side, dressed in his traditional togs, the apprentice Steven, you know, where he was still learning at, like there's a line in, I think it's in issue 12, at the feet of the Ancient One, which is a very subservient role. This apprentice who's ambitious, he's menacing Steven with just his magic, just his hand, and just much like the masked Steven, you know, they're going to employ magic against him. So I love the cover copy too, Billy. What does it say?
Oh, it says, a mind gone mad. Can even the Sorcerer Supreme defeat specters from his own grim past?
Yeah.
Shadow play.
Wow. The shadows of his past come back to haunt him. It's fantastic.
And then that first splash page. Ooh. Oh, that's one of easily, that's a top 10 Doctor Strange image, Doctor Strange image for me right there. I love that splash page.
This is one of the best. We'll post it on the site, of course, at sinkintotheweird.com, listeners. So, you know, you've got the Eye of Agamotto embedded in his forehead, giving me a creepy feeling there. And then you've also got these eyes in the shadows, you know, glancing at him from behind. And now he's stuck in the shadow realm because in the last issue, flew into eternity, literally, you know, into the body of eternity. And this is now eternity challenging Steven to a one-on-one confrontation. But it doesn't take the sort of, it's not the battle Steven expected, right, Billy? This is eternity confronting Steven with his, like they say on the cover, his own grim past, which is going to be the stand-in for eternity here. It's almost like eternity's the grandmaster, you know?
Yeah.
And he's playing a game with Steven here for the fate of the Earth.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Now, listen to this. It's great. Steven, with his exposition here, it's off the chain, but I love it. The enigmatic eternity spoke to warn me that time had run out for humanity, and I vowed to fight him to prove it must not be so. So this serves two purposes, right, Billy? This describes the situation, and it also gives us a bit of insight into what happened before. So if there are any Johnny-come-latelys to this issue, they will know just in this one speech bubble what traversed in the previous issue.
And I like that.
Love it.
I like that. I know some people crap on that because sometimes you have creators, and I know Claremont's one of these guys where, you know, every issue he would kind of reiterate everything that was going on with the X-Men. But there used to be this theory that, hey, every comic is somebody's first comic.
Yeah.
And back then, they wanted you to be able to pick up a comic and know who these people are and what was going on. So to me, I actually like that, and I like that here.
Yeah, well, you say used to be. That theory is still there because now they're going above and beyond with that, where every single Marvel comic, at least, and some DC comics too, have a page to, you know, where the credits
are mentioned.
Recap page, yes, exactly.
Oh, cool.
It's not completely a recap, it's more the credits, but then there's like a paragraph recapping what occurred. So I like that, because, you know, me picking up sporadic issues of new comics every now and then, it sort of puts me back into the story and I feel less, you know, confused. So yeah, it works. I love it.
Cool.
And then listen to Stephen, Billy, being super dramatic here. Eternity's answer was to place me here in the swirl of shifting shadows. And then he screams, and now our mystic battle is begun. Who the heck talks like that? I mean, when Stephen became this, well, when he became the apprentice of the Ancient One, he must have done a language course as well in, you know, Shakespearean dramatics.
Well, that next set of panels must have really irked you there. Oh boy.
Dude, that Eye of Agamotto's off the chain here. What's it doing? It's like, at first it embeds itself in his head, then it detaches itself organically.
Mm-hmm.
Holy God. And then it flies
creepy
around. Yeah, this eye flies around. Now it looks like a literal, realistic human eye flying off Steven's head because it's got skin. It's got lids surrounding it. Gross. And then it flies back into the orb and it looks like it's like intent, you know, like on something. It's like looking at the reader with this malevolence. And then, you know, Stephen is like talking to Eternity. He doesn't understand why he's here in the Shadow Realm, because the Eye of Agamotto, why did it detach itself, Billy? It couldn't do anything for him. There's nothing to see.
It was useless.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was useless. Yeah. And then he goes a little back and forth here with Eternity, and Eternity's like, kind of like, you're going to have to face yourself, your own inner selves, pal. Yeah, the first one to walk up is the doctor.
The Power Mad Doc. Yeah, this is like something out of a Hammer Frankenstein film, right, Billy? These docs, they're intent on one thing and one thing only, and that's to be the Surgeon Supreme. And the first doc who he encounters, the Stephen dressed in his smock, the surgeon smock, as they call it, right?
Surgical uniform, yeah.
Yeah,
it's great. I love it. He says,
"Yeah, what
if you're if you're the charlatan Mac, I've got an invitation for you."
Invitation to the dance of the Red Death.
Your presence is requested and the dance has already begun. And he's like, well, Stephen just says, lead on, surgeon.
Now look at the bottom that's covered by Stephen's thumb as he holds that card with the RSVP on it, right? It covers the name of the location, which seems to be the White House, right, Billy? But the name is the House of Mirrors. So now that's why I mentioned the mirror selves in my synopsis, because this is definitely Stephen glancing into a multiverse, a mirror. It's like the mirror dimension mentioned in the Stephen Strange, the movie, you know, the Doctor Strange movie that we had from Marvel Studios. But this is more than that, Billy. This is the mirror selves of various dimensions looking in at Stephen, of things that could have been Stephen Strange's, that could have been, or that in fact might be in different dimensions, you know. So he enters the grounds of this estate, the Hall of Mirrors, and then it looks to be the White House, and on the lawn he meets all these different Stephens. Now speak on this.
Man, it's great. A mansion, an estate. Now I hear the murmur of conversation, the clink and clatter of glassware. And then, of course, horny Steve. It seems a celebration, but I see no women.
That's the part I knew you were gonna zoom in on. Can it be like, no women? A world without women?
What a horn dog. Yeah, what a horn dog. It's like, dude, calm down.
Then why am I here?
Thinking with his dong once again. Like, yo, easy, buddy. Yeah, this is great, Stephen. Yes, everyone here looks like me. Doctors, soldiers, priests. And again, there's like just people everywhere, and they do all look like him, except for the leader, the master. And who's the master?
Ooh, Mr. Tricky Dick himself. Dick Nixon. Richard the Dick.
And Nixon. Stephen. Aha, their leader doesn't resemble me. No, wait. That's not his real face. He's wearing a mask of Richard Nixon's face. And we know, you know, hey, this is prime time, like not too long after I think Nixon got booted out by 75, I think. So This is like, you know, there were a lot of people that had an axe to grind with him, and they took it out on him in the comics, that's for sure.
And that's when the Richard Nixon masks turned up, because he became such a caricature of himself. And doesn't this make you think of Point Break, Billy?
Remember
the robbery in the beginning, the prison in masks? And, this is Richard Nixon. One of them was Nixon. I can remember something.
Yeah, like Nixon, that. Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, and I think Gerald Ford.
Jimmy Carter, man. Oh, why is he there?
There were like four in a row. They were like that. Those presidents were all in a row. So I guess that's why they did it. Oh, fantastic. I love that movie, by the way. That movie's great.
Oh, that's a fantastic movie, man. Listen, so, you know, there's lots of Stevens. All of them are Stevens in power, right? And there's some foreign Stevens, too. I mean, some foreign delegates, you know, showing up, standing there in the White House. And one of them seems to be manservant Steve taking the, you know, the role of Wong when he shows Stephen in. Here he is, master, just as you ordered. And then Stephen, aha, their leader doesn't resemble me, like you said. But then, you know, the leader immediately goes on the offensive, right? He accuses Stephen, because it seems to be Stephen's the only magician there. He's the only one that became the Sorcerer Supreme. So he's immediately the enemy, because the rest of the Stevens sort of represent power in the real world, you know, political power, religious power, you know, economic power for the businessman Steve. Even some Steven who specialize, I think they're university lecturers or professors, or, you know, there's a Steven dressed there in a sweater, looks like he's a teacher because he's carrying these books with him. So,
we forgot to mention too, in that very one there, two of the Stevens. Look at those clothes, Steve, and that crazy collar, and another Steve. Looks like we got a live one, Steve.
Yeah, they're all calling each other Steve, and Steve's writing this, if you think about it. So where's writer Steve? Mm-hmm. Well, Steve Englehart. So, you know, then Tricky Dick Steve, he accuses Stephen here. He says, "You're disrupting our society. There are too many people beginning to think like you." You know, because basically what he's referring to is Stephen not being power mad anymore, because now he's got all the power that he's ever going to need. That's what I'm thinking. But, you know, that's not what Stephen, the real Stephen says. He says that he's overcome these base power plays, you know. But Richard Nixon, Steve's not having that. He says power is what's important, and you're turning people against our society. And then the rest of the Stevens chime up. They're turning into a lynch mob here. Society needs order. Tell him, chief.
Yeah.
And then basically he sets the dogs on Steven. Well, you know, other Stevens who are like his henchmen. But Steven first, he tries to magic himself away with a bit of a spell there, because he's saying he's had enough of this. Why is he here? Eternity's wasting his time, because he's already overcome this baser desire to become, you know, a powerful person in society. He doesn't need that. He stands apart. So he says, "By candle dark and starry day, out from this place I would away."
And then what? Nothing happened. And one of the Steves, "That's your tough luck, crackpot."
and then they laugh.
Take them, boys. Take
them, boys. I love that laughter. It's like creeper-esque. And then Steve shows his chops here, his fighting skills. This is like Chop Socky Steve going ape on these guys. He kicks the one guy in the nuts with a gong fu blow there. He says, "Take me if you can, bok." And then, "My training included the mystic arts and the martial arts, wok." And then one guy, what does the one guy say, Billy? One Steve.
I think it's Tricky Dick, maybe. He goes, "Yeah, but I've got a lead pipe."
Yeah, crack. Looks like him. You're right.
Just like any other man.
What a fool. And then the chandelier comes crashing down. What the hell?
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about.
Dude, that has some kind of a symbolic meaning. I just cannot happen upon why. Maybe one of our listeners can chime in. But pretending to use magic on crash. You know what? Now, this is my theory, but it's very spurious and very, I don't know. I don't think this holds water at all. But I'm thinking that this is showing that even though Stephen does not have his magic is what causes the chandelier to crash down. Because at that very moment, Tricky Dick says, "Ha, pretending to use magic on me," and then crash, the chandelier falls down, showing that Eternity has not robbed Steve of his magic. His magic's still there. It's just locked in his subconscious, by himself, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Because there's no place for magic in the world of societal power, right? And that's why, mm-hmm. but it's still there. So that's just my theory. I don't know if that feels
could be
very tenuous there, but yeah. Anyway, and then Billy, we cut to Clea and Stephen's mystical visitors over at the Sanctum Sanctorum. they can see eternity. Stephen's spell has not blanketed the fact that eternity is looming over the earth from them, of course. They've got the mystical sight. Right. But the rest of the earth mm-hmm. is going, you know, it's just going by their everyday goings on. It's still, you mm-hmm. know, flowing. Society, everything's still fine, hunky-dory for the rest of humanity. But Clea wonders if she can help Stephen out, but she feels a little bit salty about the fact that he did not want her along for the ride. I mean, she just came from basically saving him from Umar and Dormammu.
yeah.
And from her father, Orini. And now she's not good enough to accompany him on this trip. She feels bad. And then one of the house guests arrives.
Lord Fife.
Yeah, Lord Fife. He says, because, yeah, she was talking to a couple of
Rama
them.
Khalif.
And, yeah, Rama Khalif asking him to help out. And he said, no, only Stephen. This is an interesting line. He says, of all the mystic practitioners, only Strange has unlocked the riddle of eternity. And that's kind of mm-hmm. true, because when Stephen conquered death, he basically became immortal, right, Billy?
Yeah.
So that's how he conquered eternity, but he has not conquered the personality, the persona of eternity yet in battle. He's just unlocked the riddle of immortality, really.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Clea has not done that, and she wonders if that's one of the reasons that Stephen did not take her along to battle eternity. And that's when they discover Baron Mordo has escaped.
Yeah. He's gone.
Yeah. Now, Billy, this is funny, because where do these tricky dick servants, Stevens, take the real Stephen? Well, if you can call him the real Stephen, even.
Yeah, they take him and chuck him in this, like, you know, it almost looks like a dungeon or something like that, but there's somebody inside there. Drunk Stephen's in there.
Yeah, and he's cut himself on a broken bottle. And mm-hmm. it's Strange, immediately the real Stephen says, "Let me see that. I'm a doctor." I'm like, "What the hell?" You know, mm-hmm. but
then he says, "I haven't concerned. Been clubbed unconscious in many a month."
Oh, that is the what? Yeah, because he says, "I was unprepared for physical violence." Because after all, he's the Sorcerer Supreme. That's always the last resort that he has if his powers fail him. I mean, he's done that many mm-hmm. times very effectively. One time he took on Mantis in the Defenders War, I should say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
that's
he gave her a good showing, you know, with his martial arts mm-hmm. skills. She admired them. So, yeah, Steven's no slouch when it comes to you know, mono a mono combat. But here, you know, he wasn't expecting that, so he was laid out with a lead pipe. And now he's trying to heal this broken version of himself, this drunken Steve who's been thrown in the clink. And then Eternity shows up, and because this is now the second test, right? I believe the first test was facing Power Mad Steve in multiple mm-hmm. forms, and which is personified by Richard Nixon Steven. And now he's got the second part of the test. That's why Eternity shows up again. And Steven says, why are you showing these guises to me, really? I've overcome them. I'm not Power Mad anymore. I'm not drunk anymore. I've transcended mm-hmm. those states. And Eternity says, but have you? Have you really? Or are they still a part of you waiting there to spring on you again, right? Which is kind of true, right? Mm-hmm. But you never really completely leave your past behind. It's a part of you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Eternity says, that is humanity's weakness. That's why humanity deserves to be destroyed, because they don't really learn from the past. Some do, not all. And that makes kind of sense to me. What do you think, Billy? Is the fact that even though we've got the past to reflect on and to learn from, we don't always take it to heed. There's always new wars cropping up. The horror of war has been experienced before by previous generations. We know about that through history. And yet still we're doomed almost to repeat the mistakes of the past. But not because of some higher hand. It's because of ourselves. We need to take responsibility for the things mm-hmm. we're doing. And one of the reasons is our inability to shed, you know, the evils of the past. And Stephen is a prime example of that. He can't get rid of that. What do you think about that?
Yep, I just saw something good. I don't know who the quote is by, but it said, we are starving for information. Or I'm sorry, we are drowning in information, but starving for wisdom. And yep, We certainly are.
That is very apropos there. Yeah, that makes sense. So you see, this is Steven's problem too. He is the Sorcerer Supreme, but he's not the Ancient One. Like you say, he doesn't have that wisdom.
No.
You know, because the Ancient One has accrued that over hundreds of years, over centuries. So yeah, Steven now, he's a man of immense power without the wherewithal to employ it responsibly. Sometimes he does so irresponsibly.
Yes.
And we'll see that in the new Doctor Strange appearance in Spider-Man, you know, in the MCU, the new movie. There you can see it in the trailer already. Damn, Steve. Now, I've gone on records before, Billy, that saying that the Doctor Strange in the comics is not that irresponsible. It's true. He won't take those risks that he takes in the MCU, but it's conceivable that he's the early Doctor Strange would have, you know, because he was very much inexperienced, even though he had all these this power. So, yeah. But and remember, the MCU Doctor Strange, Billy, he didn't go through that whole Shuma-Gorath trial where he had to basically take the life of his own mentor, of the Ancient One. He just became the Sorcerer Supreme in the very first movie, right after the Ancient One died, you know, killed by Cassellus, right? So, you know, he had even less wisdom and experience than the Steven in the comics. Now, this is interesting, Billy. This is where Eternity says that I did not really rob you of your magic. Still, you are incorrect. That's what he says, to say that I have stolen your power. I have left you the light of truth. And you possessed it when you appeared here, which is basically the Eye of Agamotto having power. Remember, he employed his magic in the beginning with the Eye of Agamotto. And then suddenly he entered this part of his mind, or this other realm where these power mad Stevens held sway, and then his magic couldn't be used. So that's all a product of his fragmented psyche. Now, this is where the madness thing comes into play, right, Billy? This is, remember, we've got this side story happening at the same time where Mordo, the insane, who was driven insane by a previous destructive event, right, Billy, remember that? Now, that's what...
recreation.
Yeah, this is like an echo of that event, right? And that has caused madness. But this calls into question, Mordo went mad because of that. Steven did not. Or did he? Or did he? This could be the reason for his fragmented selves too. You know, being more fragmented than usual. It could be that Steven did retain some form of madness from whatever happened with CZ Neg. It's possible. So because this whole this whole story arc, Shadowplay, is all about madness, right, Billy? It's about insanity and how Steven deals with that. Insanity and eternity. Because after all, gazing into the mind of eternity renders one insane, much like gazing into the heart of creation, you know, with CZ Neg rendered Mordo insane. So it's all of these questions being, you know, thrown out here by Steve Englehart. Is Steven insane or isn't he? You know, in a different type of insanity than Mordo, obviously, because Mordo is completely batshit, you know, off his rocker.
He's really nuts, yeah.
Yeah, at least Steven's got one hand on the wheel, whereas Mordo is completely, like, thrown into the back seat with the car just chroming off the highway, but... Yeah, so here you've got Steve then, you know, helping out his drunken self, and then he discovers an escape tunnel, because now that Eternity has revealed that his magic has not been taken from him, Steven, his conscious mind takes hold of that fact, and he employs the Eye of Agamotto, and with the Eye's help, he turns it upon himself to determine, is this dream or is this reality? And what is the disturbing conclusion of the Eye of Agamotto here?
He thinks to himself, the amulet shows my mind to be clear, awake, and aware. This is reality, such as it is. And he's like, uh-oh, now what am I going to do? Exactly. You know what I mean? He's like, uh-oh, but he finds a little escape hatch here. By the gods, that stone I was leaning against. And then the drunk, get away from there. That's my escape hole I'm digging. So he finds a way.
Oh, Shawshank Redemption here,
like
Steve.
Like a prison.
Yeah.
Like a prison movie, yeah.
No picture of Rita Hayworth, but hey, it might have been a picture of, you know... Well, there are no women in this realm, right? So nobody.
No. I'm picturing Clint Eastwood, escape from Alcatraz.
Oh, that's, classic. It's even better. And then Steven tries to still use this tunnel, even though the drunken Steven protested. He's the very selfish version of Steven, because he takes this length of chain and he's about to bludgeon the real Steven to death with it from behind.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to Mordo's astral self, right, Billy, on Earth.
Yeah.
Flying around.
Crazy good.
This is great
like
art.
Bat creature or something. Yeah, like man bat or something.
Yeah, he looks like that because his cape are the bat wings, and those flaring points from his collar are what looks to be bat ears, right? So this is sort of presaging Colin's tenure on Batman in years to come, almost, because he would draw a very fine-looking Batman. And then, you know, Mordo, he's aimless at first. He floats around, and then he finds the thread, the mystical thread of a mind as mad as his own, and he follows that. And this is where the real, you know, doo-doo is going to hit the fan here, with Mordo seeking out this aged Genghis, who's also insane, and pooling their insanity into a big old lake of crazy. So, Billy, again, Clea for the win. What happens here? We cut back to Steven about to be bludgeoned to death by this length of chain, and what happens?
Yeah, she mentally reaches out to him and, like, you know, shouts, "Steven!" And just as he's about to be, like, crowned by this drunk with the chain, you know, Clea breaks through to his mind, and it kind of makes him, you know, jump a little bit, and just that little bit of movement, the chain then misses his skull, and then he karate chops the guy. It looks like in the throat.
Yeah.
He
karate chops him in the right there on his jugular. It might have been his Adam's apple. That guy might be dead, although he's not, because Steven
ties him up
with the rags of his own shirt. And then Steven crawls through the tunnel, and then, the guy's still alive because he screams after Steven, right? He said, "If you trusted me, you'd never have turned your head." What? Well, then he'd be dead. Mm-hmm. "Don't preach to me, magician. You're no better than the rest of us."
Because, just 2 hours later, it took him to get out of there.
Yeah. Damn, that's a pretty long tunnel
I was like,
there.
Holy crap, yeah.
Yeah, that guy must have been digging for years.
What happens? Yeah, Steven's kind of creeping around. Once he gets outside and he sees another Steven, you know, creeping around, and he's like, "I can't be running around, you know, dressed like this. They'll spot me, so I need to have a plan." Well, he does is jumps one of the other Stevens and knocks him out and switches clothes with him so he can sneak into the White House and try to get a hold of Tricky Dick here and see what's really going on, you know. And he does at first, but then the drunk from the cell, I guess he somehow, like, was screaming for the guards or something like that, right? And he comes over while Steven's there with Tricky Dick trying to get to him.
Yeah, and it's 5 minutes to midnight, right, on this doomsday clock. And as you might know from the Edgar Allan Poe story we referenced, and that I once did a Richard Corbin episode on Long Box of Darkness with Misty, the Mask of the Red Death. You know, once this clock strikes 12, the Red Death shows up, and basically a plague takes everyone. It's like the end of the world. And that's what's going to happen here. This is going to be when eternity, well, takes over and destroys the Earth. And Steven has, 5 minutes to stop this from happening. So he goes to Tricky Dick and he says, "Listen, I have some secret information I want to impart to you. I don't want to name any names." And then the drunken Steven shows up, you know, having been taken from the dungeons because he was screaming to help out, you know, that he's got information for Nixon Steve. And then, you know, it's determined that this Steve, who's disguised in this white jacket, is, you know, the Sorcerer Supreme. So Tricky Dick rips that off, and that's when the Red Death shows up. Now, this is a fantastic Red Death. This is exactly as he is described in the Poe short story, right, Billy? He's got this purple cloak on with this red face and red limbs and he shows up, and then exactly midnight, "Your prompt death," says Nixon Steve. "I see you recognize who's master in this land." But then this Red Death recognizes no master, right? He just reaches out his hand and these Stevens just collapse. The priest Steven falls, the doctors, and then Stephen Strange, now that he's got his magic back, he just says, "This madness has gone far enough." So what happens there, Billy? First he takes on Tricky Dick, and then the Red Death.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, as he turns the eye on Tricky Dick, he knocks him to the ground, And then the mask kind of like melts away and he reveals another Steven.
Yeah, which we suspected all along, of course. But this is the Steven that wanted to be different, that he realized that in a world of Stevens, the Steven who stands out, you know, as different will be the ruler, or will be seen as the master, at least for a while. And so Stephen Strange has exposed him as just another run-of-the-mill Steve, you know, power monger.
Yeah.
And then he takes on Death, and Red Death, this is now a very interesting bit, right, Billy? He melts away the mask, because all of this is also about masks, you know, the masks one wears. Mm-hmm. That's why the masked Stephen showing up at the end is so important here to the story.
Appropriate, too.
Yeah, he melts away the mask of the Red Death, and what does he reveal beneath?
I love his dialogue as he turns the eye on him. As for you, Death, I would see what lurks beneath your grim facade, and it melts away. It's kind of gross. It almost looks bloody, and it says, beneath my mask, Mystic, lies but another mask, the mask of comedy.
Yeah. So he says that he's still Death. It's just Death is but a mask. And when next they meet, he'll wear yet another mask. And he says the last time they met, he wore the mask of infinity, and that's referencing the death of Stephen Strange and how he overcame it. During that classic storyline, which was the end of the Brunner, you know, during the Silver Dagger debacle, the end of the Brunner and Engelhardt collaboration, and that's when Steve became immortal. And so that's why Death references the last time they met, he wore the mask of infinity. Now he wears the mask of the Red Death and comedy, and then he will encounter a third character wearing a mask, but that will leave for a surprise until later. But this will be as much of a surprise to new readers as it is to Stephen Strange when he sees this mask reveal, or who's beneath this mask at the end. Yeah, so interesting. Very interesting. This Death character, Red Death. Not one of Stephen's greatest foes, right, Billy? But Stephen has encountered Death before, right?
No, and then apparently we find out that Death is actually French here, too.
Yeah, au revoir, Death.
I knew it.
Oh, I knew. Yeah, why does he say that? I knew it. Oh, it's classic. Yeah. That's classic.
Awesome.
So then, yeah, you then know,
Tricky Dick wakes up.
And then he leaves with a parting shot to Steven. He says, don't you see, I'm better than everyone around here. He says, I don't like people. That's why I had to rule them, keep them in their place. And then he says, no, you don't see. Now, Billy, if you think about the way Steven has been written by Stan, by Roy, you know, by Steve Englehart, by everybody, and even in The Defenders by folks like, you know, Steve Gerber and everybody else, he's always written like he doesn't like people. You know, like he's arrogant, he puts himself above them, but he really has a disdain for common humanity, but he saves them because that's his role as the Sorcerer Supreme. He cares, but he cares more about humanity as a whole, not about individual humans, I'd say, unless they're Clea from another dimension. What, is she human? Arguably no. Or unless they're his peers, and even them he doesn't really care much about, you know, so I don't know. This is kind of, it rings true to me. What do you think?
Oh, you're absolutely right. The way he's been written his entire life, he's aloof, he's cocky, he's arrogant. He thinks he's better than 90% of the people. Absolutely.
He's a dick. And that's why it's appropriate that Richard Nixon was him, and he was Richard Nixon in this issue. But then, Billy, we get to Eternity espousing some of the rules here. I find this interesting, right? Because Steven is now confused. He says, what is this game you're playing? Because you confronted me with my past, with two selves that I've already battled and overcome. And now I've done it again, proving you wrong. And Eternity says, no, it's a journey. It's not a single, or it's not two single battles that matter. It's the journey that matters. And you have not completed your journey yet, Stephen Strange. This is just a path that I laid out before you, just to give you a bit of a reminder of things that you thought you had vanquished, but you did not in fact vanquish it. Because after all, if you completely defeated those, you know, shadows from your past, this is where the shadow play comes in, play referring to the game, the shadows referring to the past, the specters from the past. If he had completely defeated them, right, Billy, they wouldn't have had power to menace him again in this very issue. You know, his drunken self, his power-mad self, the arrogance, the disdain for humanity, all of that is still a part of who he is, and that is his weakness. And that is all humanity's weakness, because after all, we have to remember, Steven stands for humanity here, right?
Right.
So, So very, this issue, like I say, when you're a kid, you might not be able to get this. I did not, but with, you know, all the rereadings I've done, I finally got it.
And then Eternity kind of waves his hand, and I like the two sides of the same coin here, where you see the Doc, and he's in the Temple of the Ancient One, and then Mordo entering the Temple of the Aged Genghis.
Yeah, this is synchronicity here on a vast scale here. He enters the Temple of the Ancient One, which he's surprised that it exists in this form, because the Ancient One is alive and well, and then Mordo enters the cave, which is the temple, sort of the Aged Genghis. At the same time that Steven confronts the Ancient One, Mordo confronts, you know, the person who would give him the power he needs, or to fuel his madness even further, to menace Steven in the coming issues. And, you know, Billy, I love the fact that it ends with Steven saying, "So far, Eternity, you've lost, because I have my sorcery. I have advanced, and now I am better than I've ever been before." So Steven has not learned anything from these past selves. And I mean, he's better in terms of power, but has he become a better human? That's still up for debate, right?
Yeah, or so more wise, not really.
Yeah, so it ends with him saying, "I have my sorcery, and through my sorcery, I will save the world and defeat you, Eternity." And then Eternity says, "Yes, that is what you have said." And then immediately we go to the sorcerous aspects of Steven's life, which is the apprentice and the man of mystery. And now we've got the third task that lies ahead for Steven in this game, which is him confronting his master, the Ancient One, as an apprentice once more. This is amazing stuff, right, Billy? And then before your wondering eyes, the grand finale, the end of the world.
Gotta love it.
He's not even being subtle there with his titles there, Steve. Okay, man. So great. Fantastic issue. We'll get to you know, gushing about it more later on when we do our Bronze Age Brilliance, right, Billy? But first, I already mentioned the credits for issue 12. Mm-hmm. What do you have for the synopsis here?
All right. As we see Doctor Strange apparently reunited with the Ancient One, Mordo has also united with the powers of the Aged Genghis. After a quick recounting of the previous two issues, the Doc visits with the Ancient One, and he tells him that indeed humanity is in grave danger. Clea then reaches out to Steven, but he shuts her out because he claims he needs his mind to be clear. He then lashes out, and the Ancient One conjures a demon. Steven quickly banishes it, and the Ancient One even repels the Doc from entering his mind. Then he sends him away. Outside, Steven faces another version of himself, the masked version. He eventually defeats him, but then Mordo reveals himself and gets the upper hand. Steven then calls to Clea for help, but Mordo stops her mind from entering. Mordo then begins to attack the entire planet with mystic bolts, intending to destroy the Earth. Well, there we go.
Yeah. Well, at the very end there, the Earth is actually, you know, devastated there.
Blowing up, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. So, and that's a fantastic panel. We'll get to that as we progress through the story, Billy. But, okay, give me your 2 cents on this story as a whole. You know, like, how does it shape up so far for you?
Yeah, I like it quite a bit. You know, it's definitely, it's showing, you know, Steven going through these challenges, and it looked like he and Mordo, you know, were on separate pathways, but by the time we get to the end of this issue, they're like two streams coming together join together to make a raucous, crazy, you know, rapids or a river here. It's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, as it goes in terms of the Stephen Strange epics you and I have read, this is not one of my favorites. It's definitely a very, very good storyline. But it's, again, Steve Englehart playing with or sort of dealing with the problem is what new threat could you come up with to challenge the Sorcerer Supreme? So, you know, we've had him being pitted against the creator, you know, CZ Neg. And before that, we had him pitted against, you know, an otherworldly entity, Shuma Gorath, you know, which is as powerful as Cthulhu. And so he defeated that. He vanquished him. And then he came through the Cizineg thing unscathed. Well, relatively unscathed. Like we mentioned, he might be there might be a thread of insanity running, a crack in his mind because of what happened there. But, you know, basically he came through that. And then he confronted death, and he faced death and won. And he became immortal. He became the Ancient One. Before, he became the Sorcerer Supreme, but he didn't become the Ancient One. Now he's on his way to becoming the Ancient One because, you know, a time cannot touch him. Right. So now, and then, you know, obviously that was linked with, you know, the physical threat of Silver Dagger. But now we've got Steven versus himself as, you know, elucidated by eternity. You know, eternity showing Steven that you're not fighting me, you know, you're fighting yourselves, because I'm just here to end the earth because you guys suck. Humanity is terrible. And yeah, you've had your time, and the earth's, you know, time is up because of you. And you can't prove me wrong, but you can try. That's what eternity did. He gave Steven the option of trying, even though he knew he wouldn't succeed, sort of. Eternity knew. And we'll see what happens later. There's a big surprise coming, but basically, this is Engelhardt. My point is, Engelhardt is struggling with giving Steven a suitable threat that he should deal with, you know. And I think he gets it right in the issues following on from issue 13, you know, issue 14 onwards, when he introduces a more mundane threat, but big enough to definitely give Steven a headache for many years to come. It will become one of Steven's greatest foes, actually, in the pages of Marvel. And, you know, for the people in the know, I'm talking here about the Big D, not Dormammu, the other Big D of the Marvel Universe, the smack-talking, vampiric, you know, account of Transylvania.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, so I liked it that he just returned to a simpler formula then, because here it's all cosmic-level stuff, like, how could you, what is the next big thread? You don't always have to go that way, right, Billy? Or what
no.
do you think?
No, you just got to be, I think, since the doc was built up to be so powerful, I don't have a problem with that, but it does create a problem wherein it takes some, you know, crazy, more powerful thing to stop him. Well, how do you keep making more powerful things and more powerful things? Like you and I said, one of the best stories was Steven versus Silver Dagger, who was just like basically a novice with magic and just like a crazed nut, like a religious zealot.
Yeah.
And that was like one of the best storylines ever. And that guy wasn't all powerful. That came off of a story that was, you know, earth shattering, but it was just basically Steven against another guy.
Yeah.
And they did a good job there with, you know, but it just keeps getting harder and harder and harder as a writer when you have a character that's super powerful to constantly come up with things to challenge him without kind of, you know, repeating yourself a little bit.
Yeah. I think you just have to change your perspective on the stories. You know, it doesn't always have to be about, you know, good versus evil, or, you know, it doesn't always have to be about a supervillain smackdown between the hero and the villain. It does, you know, you could tell different stories, but here is the Marvel formula at this point in time was very much, you know, give the hero a threat, have them deal with that. Later on, we'll see more human stories where Steven has to deal with family. You know, he has like a brother, he has like, you know, concerns with his father, and, you know, his, you know, callous nature, you know, regarding loved ones, that kind of stuff. We'll see that happening. But, you know, I think Roy Thomas will also deal with that when he writes Steven again in the late 80s, early 90s with the Sorcerer Supreme series. So, you know, you've got all of these things that will take precedence. But right now, it's firmly much in the Marvel formula where it's Steven basically just being the Sorcerer Supreme, defending Earth from threat after threat after threat, and himself. Because he's the key, right, Billy? Once you take out that key, or he's the lock that needs to be broken. Once the lock is broken, then the gates are swung wide, then the rest of, you know, the earth is up for grabs from all of these entities. So, you know, that's why he's constantly being targeted. I get that. That's fine. I love it. But like I say, that becomes difficult for a writer to keep coming up with threats.
You know, it does.
There's never a dull moment in the Doctor Strange verse, that's for sure, but there kind of has to be sometimes where you can just like sit back and have this contemplative issue where, well, Steven doesn't just have a panel with Clea to himself. It's more like, you know, like a whole issue devoted to him just You know, taking a breather. But I don't mind, you know, I don't mind. I love these old issues, you know, and it speaks to the kid in me and why I love comics, because, wow, Steven really brings it in these battles. And, you know, the battles itself are so intricate, and Englehart is up for the challenge. He comes up with ways to make the fights interesting, to show how Steven used his intelligence and innovation, and sometimes luck, and sometimes also the help of others. I mean, that's probably one of the strongest things about these issues of Volume 2, these early issues, is the fact that Clea becomes a huge, a bigger part of Steven's world than ever before. So you can't be the Sorcerer Supreme without help. That's kind of, you know, the message you get here. Even the Ancient One had the help of his apprentice to deal with the threat of Mordo. And then, you know, Steven has the help of his apprentice, Clea, and of Wong and his whole supporting cast. So I like that fact. Yeah. Now, Billy, this task, this third task against the Ancient One is interesting because basically, Steven has to reenact a trial he experienced when he was training to be a sorcerer under the Ancient One, which is walking over this pit, and he calls it the Trial of the Void, where you have to walk on this strand. It's kind of very much Indiana Jones in the Last Crusade. Huh? Sorry? A tightrope, yeah. You kind of have to walk over this pit, and then you have to squat on the strand above this abyss, and then you have to have your fortune read to you by the Ancient One.
I know. I was thinking of Peter Cushing here and being Dr. Shrek, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. That's a good reference, man. That's a good analogy. So you have the Ancient One, you know, taking out a wide variety of fortune-telling means here. He says, you know, the Tarot of Europe, the I Ching, the Hermetic science of Egypt, the astrology of Sumeria all recognize death. And then Steven says he's already overcome death, you know, and he says even though humanity, just like he himself, has faced so many threats and plagues and so many, you know, threats of death, they've always overcome it. So that's surely a sign that we'll overcome it again. But the Ancient One, he just keeps hammering this point home that, Steven, you can't battle eternity. It's just impossible because eternity is filled with cycles of change. Change means destruction and recreation, etc., etc. So you're trying to maintain the status quo here. That's restrictive, and you should let it go. You should go with the flow. Just let eternity do what he's meant to do, and let's initiate this process of destruction. Steven's not having it. And that's where the part of your synopsis comes in, where Clea tries to contact Steven, and he just shuts her out because he needs to concentrate on his conversation here with the Ancient One. And then the Ancient One says, if you will not bow to my wisdom, then you will kind of bow to force. And that comes from Steven threatening the Ancient One. He says, you know, I'm not just the apprentice anymore. I'm now the master of the mystic arts. I'm the Sorcerer Supreme. I'll take control of this game. You know, because it seems that the Ancient One has very much been talking down to Steven now. And after all, he's not that Steven anymore. He's not the apprentice anymore. But it is, he is kind of still, Billy, because like you mentioned, he doesn't have the wisdom.
Yeah, no.
To confront the Ancient One here with reason and logic. So he just resorts to force. But before he can do that, the Ancient One says, okay, I'll play you at your game that you're introducing here. I'll call the Demons of Danak.
It's kind of like when you're at work and you've been there for like 20 years and some guy that's been there 2 years tries to tell you how to do your job.
It's
kind of like Steven telling the Ancient One here.
Exactly, man, exactly. So the Ancient One can play by Steven's rules. And then, you know, Steven does blast these demons with the flames of the Faultine. He banishes the beasts, as he says, but the Ancient One's still up for a bit of a Donnybrook, but then Steven resorts to something that Apprentice Steve never would have been able to do. So he sort of does prove himself right, you know, in his argument earlier with the Ancient One that he's not the apprentice anymore in terms of power. He uses what he used against the Ancient One when he was battling Shumagorath. Sort of invades the Ancient One's mind with his astral self during the battle. And I love this bit of writing here by Englehart. He says, before his foe can comprehend it, the man of mystery becomes a pulse of the mind and flashes into the skull of the being before him. And it doesn't quite work, right, Billy? Because by all the gods, he's repulsed from the Ancient One's mind.
He bounced right out.
Yeah, because it's not the mind of a construct. Apparently, it's part of eternity. Because after all, when the Ancient One died, he became part of everything, right? That's why he died happy.
Yeah, it says, it's a state I've touched but never maintained. And he says, it cannot be eternity's mind. I know eternity's mind. Could this be the real Ancient One? Venerable sir? Silence, student.
So, yeah, the Ancient One has schooled Stephen here, right, Billy? He's mm-hmm. regressed him back to a student who's now learned mm-hmm. his lesson. He has no power over the Ancient One here because this is the real Ancient One. Because after all, the Ancient One exists as a part of the universe and hence then also as a part of Stephen's mind, as a part of his fractured self, because he's one with everything. So eternity has not really called him forth here. He's merely opened the gates to let Stephen find this part of it, the Ancient One, in his own mind. And then he's banished from the temple of the Ancient One because he wouldn't learn. He wouldn't accept the teachings of someone wiser than himself. So he's banished from the temple. He walks through the snows of the Himalayas. And then the fourth test enters into high gear here. Billy, what happens? Who's he confronted with?
All of a sudden he hears, "Magician! Turn, magician. Your time is upon you. Now you must face your ultimate superior." And it's the air quotes masked version of Doctor Strange from the Roy Thomas and Gene Colan era, blue mask.
There you go, there you go. The
more like blue faced.
Oof, it's awesome, it's awesome. And then we cut back to a sort of a joint scene, you know, again, synchronicity here between these two encounters, because Baron Mordo's astral self has been sitting cross-legged in front of the mad ancient Genghis, and they've been... he's been trying to find a way to pool their energies, their magics. And to do that, they had to have the same thought, right, Billy?
Mm-hmm.
And to have that same thought was just a matter of happenstance, right? It was just a matter of unfortunate for Stephen, but fortunate for Mordo. Luck. Good luck here on Mordo's part, because they think about Stephen at the same time. And that is the thread that allows their minds to link up. And now they can feel their mystic resources, and their insanity feeds upon itself over and over again like a loop. And they've basically created this chain of madness now, which is now out of control. It's chaos magic now, right? And that's one of the most powerful forms of magic out there. That's what they've accessed here, the magic of madness. And so Stephen's involved in this mystical battle against his masked self, but he's more powerful than Stephen, right, Billy? He's able to blast, to emit bolts of mystical force that throws Stephen off his game here. But Stephen comes back strongly here, right? He bursts free of this magical malaise that he's been subjected to and then gives as good as he gets. So he blasts the masked Steve and vanquishes him, right?
Yeah, he does stop him and basically knocks him out cold. And then, he comes over to him and he says, "That spell drained me dangerously, but what matter? The main point is I've won. It's over at last. Now this mask." And he takes off the, quote, blue mask. And he says, "Yes, as I expected. But what is this? This is a mask, too, because it shows the face of Stephen Strange. And then, and beneath it, death, Doctor Strange. We see the skull of death."
Yeah, this is the third mask of death. Because the first one was the Mask of the Red Death, where Death actually wore a mask, a red mask. And then once that was melted away, it was the Mask of Comedy, you know, because it was a farce, right? That whole episode with Nixon in the White House. So that's where the laughter came in. Now, he took off the mask of the masked Stephen to reveal his own mask. And there was another mask beneath that, the Mask of Death, which is just a skull. But then even that mask fades away, and the final mask is revealed, Billy. Who is that final mask?
Baron Mordo, by the crimson bands of Sidorak, Baron Mordo.
More powerful than ever, Billy, because Baron Mordo has now inserted himself into this narrative through the magic of the Age Genghis and his own, and his insanity. And Eternity predicted this. Eternity saw that this is Stephen facing his first foe, and the foe that embodies what Stephen has to fear the most, which is madness. The insanity of being immortal and alive forever and confronting eternity. And also the insanity of thinking you can battle eternity, because what eternity is saying here, you have to be insane. And the Ancient One also hinted at that. You have to be insane to think you can fight and battle and prevail against eternity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and against destruction and the cycle of the universe. So Baron Mordo embodies madness now. So this is the final mask, the mask of madness. At least that's how I interpret it. But he didn't really, Engelar doesn't come out and say it. This is all just conjecture, right, on our part.
Yeah.
But he blasts Steven with magical bolts of bedevilment, which is so powerful now because it comes from two magical sources, the aged Genghis and Baron Mordo himself. And then Baron Mordo plunges him into this vortex of madness, because he screams at that same time, "Madness, strange! Madness is chaos, the world inside out! But provide a madman with a marker, and he'll find his way home." And that's what Mordo did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Through these mad dreams, he's found a way out, you know? And Stephen, in his arrogance, did not think this will happen. That's why he's completely caught off guard. I mean, the only one who was worried about this was Clea all the time. She sensed that Steven's weighing over his head. That's what she tried to assist him, even though he insisted that she stay put. Clea was the only one with enough sense here. She worried herself sick over Steven. Now it proves that her worries have merit here, because Steven is now out of his league, literally, because he has to deal with madness. And whereas Baron Mordo is now an old friend of madness, Steven is a novice when it comes to dealing with his own, you know, fractured mind. So he's defeated. And then what does he do, Billy? He calls on Clea finally again to help him out. And it doesn't help. In fact, this is Clea running to her. Well, this is Clea basically being led like a lamb to the slaughter here. Because what happens, Billy? Once Clea appears.
Yeah, she shows up. And of course, she's confused because she doesn't know what's going on. And she says, "Something is wrong. Mordo is here, but he is helpless. There must be something else." And then all of a sudden, one instant of error, one simple slip, and the game is over. And Mordo says, "Demons of darkness, in the name of Satanish, by the flames of the Faultine, let Clea's mind vanish." And then she's just kind of standing there like dumbstruck, like, you know, like her body's there, but her mind isn't.
Yeah, her mind has been, you know, not destroyed, but taken from her body. So she's just basically a limp bag of flesh now. So Steven has led her to this sad state of affairs, and it's all his fault. And, you know, he resorted again to calling her for help, and that has, you know, now led to Clea being rendered
She's comatose. Paid for it.
Yeah, she's paid for it. This is horrible, right, Billy? And the fact that he did that so abruptly, Mordo, immediately, right? So, and then Mordo just points towards Steven and he says, you know, this is now eternity speaking, right? He said, "The unexpected beat you, strange." You know, chaos, magic, madness, the unexpected. He did not expect Mordo to show up and use his madness as a weapon, because as of now, the madness was incapacitating Mordo, right, Billy? But not anymore. Mm-hmm. Now he's using it as a spear to stab at Steven, and he's drawn first blood here. Maybe even a mortal wound that he's caused. So Eternity says, "Your world is in the grip of madness. It plays its games as if it cannot lose, but it can. It has." Mm-hmm. "One more thing, presumptuous man. This world is not the nether realm you believe it to be." Because up to now, Stephen had, even though the Eye of Agamotto showed him that this is reality, he would not believe it. He thought this is some dream projection, right? And now Eternity reveals it is the actual Earth that he's been on all along, and boom! The Earth is in the throes of destruction, right? Believe these mystical bolts.
What a page.
Wow, that's the final page here of issue 12, and it's the Earth being torn apart, ripped apart by these mystical energy bolts. It takes 8 minutes, they say. All its children are cinders and dust in less than 8 minutes. So that's how it ends, and it says, "You want answers? You want solutions? Well, you'll find them in Doctor Strange 13. Holy moly! Okay, cool. Billy, what a cliffhanger, you know, to put this on.
That's great.
It's awesome, man.
That is so really good.
Billy, we'll head straight into our Bronze Age Brilliance and Mighty Marvel missteps. So, wow, this is fantastic stuff. What did you have for Bronze Age Brilliance here?
Okay, so for issue 11, it definitely is the Red Death and Nixon. I love that. Yes,
the comedy.
That was so cool. Oh, yeah, that was so cool. Just the absolute insanity of that that whole issue. Like, you know, two-thirds of it was probably all that shenanigans. That was just funny, hilarious, great. I loved it. And then in 12, it was definitely the scene with the Ancient One. I enjoyed that quite a bit. You know, Stephen once again, you know, becoming the student but not wanting to admit it. And then, you know, the Ancient One kind of putting him in his place. I like that a lot.
yeah. That's mine is the same. The comedy aspect of this and the just the plain weird craziness that Engelhardt injects here with the psyches of Stevens showing up in their different guises from different multiverses or mirror dimensions or what could have been, and then Nixon Steve with the mask being the, you know, the leader of that troop of Stevens, of evil Stevens. And that's the best of it. That's one thing I always remember when I think about this time. I don't really always recall the battle with Eternity. Of course, the madness of Mordo as well being used against Steven as this unexpected weapon, which is really the only thing that could lay the Sorcerer Supreme low, right, Billy? Is the unexpected. Because mm-hmm. Steven is like Batman, you know, he plans ahead. He's got all these different scenarios of possible threats mapped out in his mind and how he's going to deal with them. But this is something that he did not see coming. And Eternity used that against him. He said that is the problem of humanity, you know, it's that when something unexpected happens, you're unable to use the knowledge you've gained from past events and from past endeavors to adequately deal with this new thing that has cropped up, you know, and in this case, it's madness being leveled against Steven. And we've never really seen Steven confront madness as a force before.
No.
Yeah, so interesting, Billy. Very interesting. That's definitely my Bronze Age brilliance too. The weirdness, but also, you know, a little bit of the whole concept here that Engelhardt's playing with about how to threaten Doctor Strange again with a significantly large evil that really warrants the fact that he will have to be taken to task and be defeated. And that's when we have the hero at their best, right? When they're in the throes of defeat and they have to pull themselves back up. And we'll see that happening to an extent in issue 13. So you're going to have to wait for that, listeners. Billy, any Mighty Marvel missteps on that you could identify?
So in specifically, I wrote down for issue 11, I was like, none. And then I'm like, well, there's only a tiny little thing. I just don't understand why Engelhardt put in these other characters, because they're basically just furniture. They don't do anything. The Rama Khalif and Lord Fife.
Yeah,
I don't get it. Like, they could have at least tried to do something to just, you know, make it worth them even being in the issue, but they just kind of stand there and they're like, we can't do anything. And that's all they're like furniture in the issue. They don't do nothing.
The fact that they're so powerless that and that the aged Genghis is considered one of their ilk, one of their peers, that sort of depowers the ancient Genghis in my mind and making me wonder how Baron Mordo could have gotten enough power from him, you know, added to his own to take on Steven, because if Lord Fife and Rama Khalif are so powerless to assist, and they were like that in the previous few issues too, in issues 9 and 10, then how can, you know, the aged Genghis be able to supply Mordo with enough power to lay Steven low? I just don't understand that, you know.
Yeah.
But still, you know, we'll see. Nightmare might have a hand in this. He's going to show up. We hinted at that in the beginning. So, yes. But yeah, so my Bronze Age brilliance that I wrote down for issue 11 and 12, very similar to yours, with a slight change at the end. I wrote down none, and then but I was thinking, and then again none. I couldn't really see anything. Even the like you mentioned, the characters that just hang out at the Sanctum Sanctorum, just enjoying the pleasures of Wong serving them the whole day.
Yeah, like a hotel. It's like, what?
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, I just ignored them. It was just to get Cleo to have some dialogue, to have someone to talk to while Steven's not around, really. That's really all the purposes it served. But they could have had Wong for that as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, not enough to take away my enjoyment of these two issues. Now, I'm not saying they're my favorites. Like I mentioned earlier, they're not. But they're, you know, I enjoyed them, rereading them, studying them, analyzing them for this podcast again to such an extent that I really couldn't find any negative things to say. So, Yeah, I'm just going to go with none.
And then issue 12, the only thing that bothered me a little is how, you know, Clea reaches out to him. He kind of shuts her down, and then, you know, five scenes later, he's reaching out to her, help, help. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right, well, away, it's get lost, and then come help me.
Like, yeah, really? that part was bad. But, you know, it's Steven, again, you know, getting the idea of pooling magic, which he did in The Dark Dimension against Umar and Orini. He got the idea this time around from seeing that Mordo has help, you know, from an unexpected source. So he wanted to do that. So it makes sense from a strategic point that he would do that. But yeah, earlier than him not employing Clea's help, that ties in with his arrogance and with Eternity's whole, you know, point here, that arrogant humanity thinking that now they're better than they were before, whereas actually they're just the same because they haven't internalized the lessons of the past. Steven's arrogance is very much still there, much like the power mat Steven had. And, you know, so I don't know. It makes sense for me. But, yeah, he treats Clea abysmally. I don't even know why she still stays with him at this point, you know.
he's a knucklehead.
So, anyway, great stuff, Billy. Now, we're going to take a little bit of a break. And when we come back, we'll be ready for some shop talk. So, stay with us, listeners. Don't go away.
What's in that tea? Psilocybin? LSD?
It's just tea. With a little honey.
What just happened?
Open your eyes.
All right, we're back with Shop Talk. Billy, I've got a lot of stuff on the horizon, but first I want to ask you about something. This question is prompted by fantastic videos and pics that I've seen lately on Twitter and Facebook. You seem to have been going on a shopping spree, my friend. Can you tell us about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I found some really good deals. I sold some other comics of mine to scare up some cash. So what I did was put that cash to good use, and I found some omnibus editions because I'm just so far behind in my DC, you know, buyings and reading. Because I didn't start till just, you know, maybe a decade ago. So I thought, I am never going to be able to collect all of this and all of that. Like, how can I get my hands on something, you know, to kind of get me there quickly? And found some really good deals on Amazon and some on eBay for some omnibus editions. So, yeah, House of Secrets 1 and 2, I have both of them now. And then just the other day, I got Swamp Thing, the Bronze Age Omnibus 2 as well. So that's just awesome. I can't wait to dig into them.
Oh, those volumes are fantastic. Yeah, it's very hard to fill up those runs, you know, Billy. Those old issues from the late 60s and 70s, House of Secrets, House of Mystery. It's almost nearly impossible unless you're willing to fork out insane amounts of cash.
Yeah, they're expensive. You're not kidding, man. And it's like, like I said, I'm just thinking there's so many issues, but, you know, the omnibus editions, man, they cover a good chunk, and I got a good deal on them, so I couldn't say no to it.
Yeah, and one of the reasons is, like you mentioned, you're getting into DC more, but it's also because on Magazines and Monsters, you're featuring a lot of DC content, too, in terms of the old horror comics and whatnot. And we might be, you know, venturing into that territory come next year, around October. In Into the Weird,
though, this is
Into the Weird related stuff. Yeah, we might be venturing into, you know, that kind of territory. Yeah, and next month we will, you know, touch upon this stuff again, although it won't be completely DC horror. But I think Into the Bizarroverse might have to make a return, you know, because you and I were very busy over Christmas period, so Dormammu might have to step in again and help us out with our other dimensional selves. We might have to, you know, fill in for us, pinch hit. You know, we might be busy and we might miss a recording there.
Yeah, and then you and I are definitely going to be talking about Swamp Thing in the near future as well. So that was a cool to get that.
On Magazines and Monsters and definitely on Long Box of Darkness. That's right, man. No, I'm impressed by what you've been picking up. Well, you know, I've got a couple of things to mention. I'm very happy with my accomplishments during October because I managed to, for the first time ever, do my 31 days of horror, and that is a miracle unto itself, Billy, because that was during the busiest month of recording you and I had ever had. You know, not only did we do the Patreon, but we did All Star Squadron with the World on Fire cast, two episodes of that in October, two episodes of Star Rocket Radio, our new show during October, two episodes along with the Halloween special for Into the Weird during October. You had like 3 or 4 magazines and monsters that I was involved with. No, not three. I was involved with 2, I think, or 3. No, 2.
Yeah, at least 2, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, we were recording like crazy. I had an episode of Long Box of Darkness that dropped in Halloween as well. You know, but I still managed to make it. I for some reason, I don't know why, but I think it's also because of my wife. She was intent upon watching some horror with me. Bad horror, in good horror, whatever. You know, well, she calls it bad. I called it all good. But, you know, she sat through it with me. Sometimes she would not often go to sleep, but... So, you know, basically I did, 5 Del Toro movies. I did 6 John Carpenter films. I did 5 Cronenbergs. And then I did 5 Stephen King-related movies. I did 4 Toby Hoopers. One that you and I were going to be doing on a live tweet, but we missed that window. You know, we're talking about the fun house here. Remember, you and I were going to do that live tweet.
Yeah, we're going to try that one. Yeah.
And then I managed a couple of Dario Argentos there at the very end.
Ooh.
And, nice. You know, I managed to hit 31 horror movies in October. That's a feat and a half for me. I've never done the 31 Days of Horror successfully. Like I said, wow. So I'm impressed with myself.
Congrats.
There. Yeah, man. Thanks.
Absolutely.
And then, Billy, I did manage to go to the shop last week, and I picked up The Death of Doctor Strange number 2, and I picked up a tie-in, Death of Doctor Strange Avengers number 1. Both of them pleasantly surprised me. I already said I liked the first one, Death of Doctor Strange, as you might remember that I read. That one was pretty spectacular. So the creative team, of course, Jed McKay, Lee Garbett, Antonio Fabella, they did The Death of Doctor Strange number 1, and then they... on Death Doctor Strange number 2 as well. I'm briefly going to mention what happens just to give you an inkling, because I really think Doctor Strange fans, probably the listeners who are hardcore Doctor Strange fans, they're already picking this up and reading it. But for any of you who might have followed, you know, my advice earlier, which says don't pick up any new comics, you disregard that advice, because this stuff's really good. Okay, so the cover is just Doctor Strange, you know, in his coffin, wrapped up in the Cloak of Levitation, being carried by what appears to be, you know, notaries in the Marvel Universe, you know. So it's got a great cover, very ominous, very sad. But, you know, we know we don't have to be sad, because Doctor Strange sort of showed up at the end of issue 1. Basically, a pocket dimension Doctor Strange, which was, you know, a version of Doctor Strange that he had created, that he had put there in case of an emergency, that if he ever really does die, that pocket dimension self would wake up and enter our world to... sort of, you know, maintain the barrier that he puts around the Earth to protect us from other dimensional invasions. Now, that barrier is weakening with the death of the Sorcerer Supreme. And this Doctor Strange that showed up from the pocket dimension, he's not the Sorcerer Supreme yet. So he's having trouble maintaining this barrier. In fact, he cannot do it at all. So, Billy, now this issue is great, because it starts off with all of these creatures, these threats of old, probing the weakness of the Earth now that the barrier is failing, right? You've got Agamon showing up, and then you've got Dagoth from the, you know, Lovecraftian Enemies of Steven that we talked about during the Shuma-Gorath run. He shows up. you know, he raises the sunken city of Calamish on the coast of Cornwall.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, Agamon from the Purple Dimension took over the Gobi Desert. And then you've got Tibero, who claimed the ancient jungles of Peru as his own. You've got Umar manifesting a portion of the dark dimension in Antarctica. And you know, so you've got all these threats, and then you've got this Tyro Steven showing up. Now, not only does he not have the power of the Sorcerer Supreme, he doesn't have the knowledge of who these people are surrounding him. He doesn't know who's Dr. Voodoo. Brother Voodoo's now Dr. Voodoo, of course. He doesn't know who is Baron Mordo, who's now his ally briefly. He doesn't know Wong. Well, he knows Wong, but, you know, he doesn't know, you know, who Wong is at this point in time, you know, anything about Wong's life and so forth. And then, you know, they've got to deal with this, and Steven has to, you know, he gets a call from Captain America saying, listen, we've got trouble, you know, all of these forces are impinging. Are you going to do something about it? And, of course, Captain America knows Doctor Strange is dead, but he also now, you know, contacts the Sanctum, and he's surprised to see this other Doctor Strange there. And Doctor Strange does not know what to do. And then, Billy, guess who shows up right outside Steven's door in this purple comet of energy? It's Clea. She falls into his arms. And she's being pursued. Now, this is where it gets really freaky. And this is what I loved about this issue. She's being pursued by these entities. New characters introduced here by Jed MacKay. And the art is insane. It's really gross. It's really horror, you know. And it's these entities called the Three Mothers. Now, this was especially impactful because I just finished, like I said, the Argento movies, where the Three Mothers trilogy, right, Billy? Those Argento horror movies. So this has nothing to do with that, though, but it had this weird connection for me. And these Three Mothers, you won't believe what they look like, Billy. I'm going to send you a picture later. They're scary as hell. And Steven has, they're hunting Clea. They're hunting Clea. And then, and then there's this funny bit where the Avengers, they make an appearance, and then Steven tells Captain America, they're after the girl. And Captain America says, you mean your wife? And Steven's like, what? He doesn't know who Clea is. Not this Steven. So the Avengers show up to help Steven out in this mystical battle because these entities prove too much for everyone to handle. Even Thor, even Carol Danvers, Iron Man, they cannot do anything against these creatures. Now, let me quickly give you a description of them, right? At the back of the issue, they give a good description. They say, okay, with no Sorcerer Supreme, Earth is left entirely defenses against the mothers of all mystical threats. Meet the Three Mothers. The first one is called The Weird, with a Y. Very up our alley, right, Billy? An alien mage priestess. Now, she looks to be like a blind, I don't know how to describe her, insect-like robed figure with this ridiculous clown smile on her face. So that's her, the Weird, an alien mage priestess. Second, the Crown, a powerful warrior queen. She looks like a satanic Amazon from DC. Wow. And she very much resembles Lilith. You know, or Satana. Sorry, I meant to say Satana, yeah. But she's got this mask on with this floating crown above her head. Very Hellboy-esque, too. And she's got this fiery blade with all this spiked armor. Very metal, like, you know, the series from DC, Dark Knight's Metal from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. And then the last one is the worst of all, Billy. The last one is The Crawling, a monstrous composed of acid-mouthed worms with eyeballs at the end of their bodies. Ew!
Wow, that sounds wild.
Dude, this is crazy. And then they have this full-fledged battle with the Avengers. It's insane. So I'm loving it. It's freaking great. And then, you know, in the Avengers' own comic, well, this offshoot comic, The Death of Doctor Strange, Avengers number one, which I'm so glad that the comic store LCS manager forced me to get. It's basically, it starts with a meeting of the Illuminati way back when, and Iron Man saying that he distrusts Doctor Strange because Doctor Strange is not in his realm of conception and control. And then it cuts to the Nexus of All Realities in the swamp, right, Billy, where now that Doctor Strange is gone, there's going to be some, you know, incursion from the Nexus. The Nexus is going to be used as a gateway because Man-Thing is also nowhere to be found. And then basically the Earth is being, at first it appears to be an attack by multiple juggernauts. Not just one juggernaut, man. This is the power of Sidorak sort of trying to invade the Earth here. But as it turns out, Billy, no, the threat is not from Sidorak himself. It's from his illegitimate red-skinned child. Oh man, dude! And then there's the Avengers are fighting these avatars of Sidorak in this, on the streets of New York. And then Iron Man has to forage into limbo to find out what is the root cause of this Sidorak incursion here. And you think Ditko drew a fantastic limbo? Yes, he did. Nothing can compare with Ditko's limbo. But damn, you should see this freaky limbo drawn here by, I think it's Ryan Bodenheim as the artist. By the way, Alex Pecknadel is the writer on this, and then Ryan Bodenheim on art with this lady Rochelle Rosenberg on colors. This is incredible. This Limbo Billy, I'm going to send you a picture of this as well. I'll post it on the site after this episode drops. This Limbo scares the crap out of me. It's so eerie and it just gives me goose flesh. And then Iron Man now, you know, has to deal with magic, which he's not up for. And he has to basically go on this this Black Ops mission into the realm of Sidorak to deal with this threat of this illegitimate kid. So it's good wild. Times is really good times. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah,
it's, cool. It's damn good times.
It's really cool.
Yeah, but Chop Talk's not over yet, Billy, because there's one thing you and I haven't mentioned yet. What happened recently to us, which we still can't quite come to grips with. I can't believe that we were this lucky on the World on Fire podcast.
Our latest episode was us interviewing Mr. Roy Thomas.
Roy Thomas, the actual Roy Thomas. Roy the boy, rascally Roy himself. He was there. We interviewed him. We talked to him. We saw him on Zoom. We face to face with Roy. He saw us. We saw him. You know, wow. It was fantastic. It was epic. I can't believe that we got
crazy him. Crazy good. Yeah, it's so much
fantastic.
Fun.
So because of Roy, you know, we've been reading a lot of Roy stuff, and I'm going to have something that I'm going to introduce later during our recommendations of Ragador, because we ran out of time during that interview because of a technical glitch. So there's about 10 to 15 minutes that we could have had him on longer, where we obviously now struggle to get back on. But, you know, be that as it may, you know, I wanted to plug some of Roy's stuff on that interview. I couldn't, so I'm going to do that on this episode during our recommendations of Ragador. But Billy, that was a fantastic episode. So if any of you weirdos out there have not listened to A World on Fire episode 22, do so, because that's where we talk to Roy. And we don't just talk about All-Star Squadron, although we should have, because it was the All-Star Squadron show we had him on. But we talked about horror, we talked about Morbius, we talked about, you know, the horror comic surge there from Marvel in the early 70s. We discussed his time at Marvel, DC, you know, his thoughts on Crisis on Infinite Earths. It's good times.
Yeah. It was more DC focused, but yeah, we did talk a little Marvel there too, because we couldn't help ourselves. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Roy was very nice, and his PR guy, John, too. Super nice guys, and, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully we can get him on again to maybe talk some more All-Star Squadron, Infinity Inc., and then, hey, you never know, maybe some Marvel stuff as well. We know he loves to talk about Conan and some of the other things he wrote there in the, you know, Bronze Age 2 for Marvel. So hopefully we can have another conversation with him, or who knows?
Yeah, definitely. He was definitely up for it there at the end there, so... Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's it for Shop Talk, but, you know, we're not done yet, because we've still got to get to our Dormammu segment here. Dormammu probably has some words for us. I don't know what he's going to say, but, you know, it's not going to be anything nice. So we'll get to him, and then hopefully he'll give us suitable introductions for the recommendations of Ragador. So, okay, stay with us, listeners. We'll be back right after this.
Greetings, you moronic mortals. It is I, the Dread Dormammu, once again, here to improve the quality of this infinitely boring podcast by Billy D and that idiot Herm. And speaking about boredom, Dormammu has never been so bored in his life. After reading The Death of Doctor Strange number 1 and being wrapped up in fits of laughter, I found myself without much to do. So, I thought I'd spy on you humans a while, taking a cue from my old enemy, the Watcher. And I discovered a certain something you do that keeps you entertained, and I decided to try it out myself. This thing I'm referring to is, of course, Twitter. That's right, Twitter. And you twits just love your tweets, don't you? Well, have no fear. The Dread Dormammu has decided to impart his infinite wisdom to you by myself tweeting out my thoughts and opinions and feelings. That's right, the Dread Dormammu now has a Twitter account. You can find me at Anti Vashanti. on Twitter. And for you American Philistines out there, that's anti the Shantai. I've been working on some choice tweets already. This is one directed at, of course, my dead enemy, Stephen Strange. Hey, Stephen, your birth certificate is an apology to the condom factory. How about this one? Hey, Stephen, you're not the dumbest person on the planet, but you sure better hope he doesn't die. Hey, Stephen Strange, the last time I saw something that looked like you, I flushed. Oh, Twitter's gonna be a lot of fun. So remember, mortals, follow me at AntiVishanti for your daily dose of Dread Dormammu dynamism. Oh, and here's the recommendations of Ragador. They better be good, or I'll tweet about it. Yes, I think I will. All right, mortals, until we see each other again, when your destruction is imminent, or in the Tweeterverse.
Alright, we're back with the recommendations of Ragador. Billy, as ever, I'll let you go first, man. What do you have for us this week?
Okay, so this might be a little controversial, and I'm sorry if it is for some of our listeners, but the recommendation I have is called Wolverine Classic Volume 1. I don't know if you got to see these over in SA. Well, I guess, no, you were probably in Asia by then. I think these came out in 2005. They were trades that collected, you know, the Wolverine classic series that started in the late 80s there with Chris Claremont and John Buscema artwork. And I loved this era for Wolverine where he was kind of by himself and he was in Madripoor.
Was this John Buscema on pencils?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know those. I got the issues, you know, when I was in the late 80s.
Yeah.
But I never got the collection. So they had collections in the early 2000s collecting these issues?
Mm-hmm.
Wolverine Classics. Yeah, I don't have them.
Yeah, they're thin trades. They only collect 5 issues at a pop, but I think I have the first 4. I don't know how many they put out before they probably put the kibosh on it, but I think I have the first 4 or maybe like 1, 2, 3, 5 or something like that, but I have 4 of them and I love these because I know a lot of people don't really care for that. They like Wolverine, you know, more as the mutant and with the X-Men and all that jazz, or even, you know, up in Canada with Alpha Flight doing crazy stuff, but I really enjoyed these. I thought these stories were really good. I thought Claremont did a really good job here with Wolverine, you know, down in, like I said, Madripoor.
Yeah,
I love that. It's kind of like almost like spy stuff.
Yeah,
I
like
that.
Wolverine channeling Nick Fury because he's even got an eye patch. I mean, it doesn't he go by Patch for a while there?
Yeah.
And it's James Bond Wolverine. Oh, I love it. No, it's great. Mm-hmm. It's really great. And Buscema's art, man, is fantastic.
Oh, my gosh. It's great. Yeah, I love it. And then you get some Silver Samurai. And then you get these two crazy dudes called Roughhouse, who's kind of like a bruiser, and a guy called Bloodsport, that he's this crazy, like, chalk white vampire guy. Oh, I love it.
That's fantastic. No. I remember those issues fondly. I've got a friend back home who's a massive Wolverine fan. He's got all the Wolverine issues. He even has the first appearance of Wolverine. And, you know, he was the one who introduced me to those Wolverine comics. Like, of course, I loved Wolverine from the X-Men, and I read the miniseries that they did in the early 80s with Chris Claremont and, you know, with Frank Miller. I never explored Wolverine on my own after that. And then this friend introduced me to the Wolverine series that kicked off in the late 80s, and that's where I got it. And I had most of that run, you know. I still have, probably. I think I left some of them in SA, though. but I love that era, Billy. So what a great recommendation for Into the Weird. I mean, those comics are weird if you think about it, because it's not your usual Wolverine, like you say.
Yeah, no, like I said, a couple of the, like, some of it's just, you know, he's, like, dealing with, like, local corrupt, like, cops or, not presidents or, you know, something like that, political figures and stuff like that, too. But, yeah, crazy stuff like I said, Silver Samurai, and then that Roughhouse and Bloodsport guys, they're crazy. And, you know, as the series goes on, it's more and more crazy stuff like that. But, yeah, definitely check that out. I mean, they're way out of print now, I'm sure, but there's been so much Wolverine stuff printed over the years. I'm sure they're not too expensive.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's a great recommendation, man. Listen, so what I have is more Roy related, because like I mentioned in Shop Talk, I want to plug some of Roy's stuff that I did not get a chance to during our interview with him on the Wolfcast. Mm-hmm. So this is some of his recent material that he's put out, written all by himself. And these are three full-length books. Now, they're nonfiction, but they're fantastic for any Into the Weird fan. As you know, listeners out there, you might know Billy and I are huge fans of Conan the Barbarian, all the Robert E. Howard properties we can get our hands on. We even do a Conan the Barbarian show with King Cull and Red Sonja on our Patreon, which is Radio Free Iboria. And this is some of the stuff I've been using as research, along with the things you can find in Alter Ego and, of course, in Back Issue Magazine. I've been using this to do the research to give some extra info when it comes to those episodes on our Patreon site. Now, this is specifically three very nicely bound little volumes by Roy Thomas called Barbarian Life, a literary biography of Conan the Barbarian. Now, this is basically Roy's reminiscences of every single issue, at least of the 115 Conan issues he wrote in the beginning. And you know Roy came back to write Conan at the end there before in the early 1990s, yeah, before the title wrapped up. I think he had like 30 or 35 issues of Conan still that he wrote. But this does not include those, which leads me to think there might be a volume 4 of these being published. But he published the first volume here, Barbarian Life, in 2018, and then the second in 2019. And then the third only came out this year in 2021. And basically, it's Roy with fantastic recall going over every story. It's like 2 pages or more devoted to each story with black and white covers sometimes. And then it's Roy telling us how he came up with the story, what influenced him, what he can remember about the story and the art and the editorial process and all of that. And this is fantastic research material for anyone rereading the Conan the Barbarian series from the 70s, you know, during the Roy tenure. And then the latest volume. Now, the first two volumes are all about just the Conan, you know, four-colored series, the regular title at Marvel. But then the third one, Billy, which I only recently got, I think like a month or two ago, is Roy writing essays. And then there's also the usual Roy talking about issue recreation, because there's, I think, 5 issues that he did not cover in volume 2 of the regular run, which is issues 101 to 115. And that's Roy, you know, wrapping up those issues and how he was inspired to write them. And then he talks about the What If story, a whole article on the What If story, What If Conan Walked the Marvel Universe, that classic tale where his wife shows up. You know, Dan Thomas is the inspiration for the female character in that one. And then he talks about 8 issues of King Conan, which he wrote. And then he talks about, it's a huge article he wrote for in the 1990s, which he reprints here, where he talks about Savage Sword of Conan. And he has a lengthy section on Esteban Morato. And then he talks about Conan and the Comics Code, which is a different article. And finally, a lengthy interview with Roy Thomas. And if I'm not mistaken, that interview is conducted by, let me just have a look here in the book. Who's that interview conducted by? Anyway, it's by a famous, you know, article writer in the comic book universe. Let me get to this quickly. Anyway, so yeah. Billy, this thing's worth it. They're not that pricey. I think they're like 14 or 13 bucks.
15 bucks maybe. 15 bucks, yeah, maybe.
Oh, this is by Jim Amash. The interview is by Jim Amash. So,
gotcha.
And this interview has all the pertinent questions you would ever want to hear someone ask Roy about Conan. Mm-hmm. And every answer is typical Roy. It's like a page long answer per question. So this interview is lengthy, my friend. I think it's like almost 25 pages of Roy just talking Conan. And then at the end, you've got an appendix of sword and sorcery in comics. Holy moly. By Crom, I should say. By Elric's teats. These things are good. So you got to get them if you're a Conan the Barbarian fan and if you're a Roy Thomas fan. It's just amazing. So, yeah, that's my recommendation. A lengthy one. I apologize for that. But, yeah, worth getting, definitely. All right, Billy, well, are we going to wrap it up?
Super cool.
Yeah, man, super cool, dude. Really. I mean, wow, we love Conan, and we know there's lots of Conan talk lately with all the Marvel reprints happening and, of course, our Dragons and Jive shows and, I should say, Radio Free Iboria shows and our House of Licensed Ideas. So Conan is just making a comeback big time. And, you know, so Billy, then we've got another segment here. I'm quickly going to do an Allies of Agamotto.
Cool.
But we'll play a promo ad before then. So stay with us again, listeners. Be patient, and we'll be back with that Allies of Agamotto segment.
Afternoon, everybody.
Ryan!
How's that baby treating you, Mr. Daly?
Like Thanos snapping his fingers at my bank account.
In that case, how about a beer on the house?
Sure, gotta give my mouth something to do between podcasts.
Say, Ryan, I don't get how you have so much time for podcasting. Doesn't your wife want you spending time with the baby?
Would you? Truth is, I think she's a little worried about how much time I'm spending with the kid, ever since his first words were Dagobah system. Now she wants me to go out and do something mature, something productive, and most of all, something lucrative that can support the family.
So you're going to...
podcast about Cheers, yeah. That kid's not going to start college for 18 years. I got time. Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. Coming soon to the Fire and Water Network.
All right, we're back with our Allies of Agamotto segment, and we got some feedback here, an email sent by our old friend Nigel Spink. That's right, Nigel's back with some great comments. This time he directs it at our episode 37, Monster Party, our pre-Halloween show that we gave you listeners in October. And Nigel said in his email, "Just listen to your early Halloween episode, an appropriate choice for this time of the year. Marvel team-up number 36 and 37 featuring Spider-Man, the Frankenstein monster, and the Man-Wolf. A classic meeting of superpowers and monster menace from Jerry Conway and Sal Buscema." And then Nigel goes on to tell us a bit about his history with the title and with Man-Wolf. "At the time, in 1975, I had started to buy team-up every month, but in my youth, I had a bit of an aversion to stories that linked horror characters with superheroes, so I didn't buy these two issues. Having since acquired the story, as these issues are included in Marvel's Man-Wolf The Complete Collection, published 2019, I don't think I really missed anything." Yeah, that's true, Nigel. I was a little bit different when I was young. I loved superheroes mixing with monsters all the time. The Thing was a monster for me. Man-Thing constantly met superheroes. He was a horror character for me. And then, of course, my favorite Marvel horror character, Morbius, is a type of superhero, supervillain slash horror character. But I can understand the two genres don't easily mix. Not for most folks, at least. So completely understand what you mean there. And then Nigel continues. He says, "Yes, it's a fun story, I guess, with elements of horror provided through Frankenstein and Man-Wolf, a creepy castle, a mad scientist, etc. Elements of secret agent stories with Agent Clemmer of S.H.I.E.L.D., Bond-type villains and skis. All of that is great, but the plot lacks in certain areas." And this is true. Nigel is, he's got some salient comments over here. Listen to this. "As you guys pointed out," says Nigel, "where was Spidey Spider Sense when he was taken out from behind twice? How was Spidey transported to Switzerland? How did Von Stupp acquire the Frankenstein monster? Or a better question yet, how did he acquire the Man-Wolf?" So those are some pretty damn good questions, Nigel. Yeah, we were wondering them ourselves. But they do explain a little, and Nigel will go on to mention this editor's note that's coming up here. He says that Marvel Team-Up issue 37 had a September 1975 cover date. Creatures on the Loose featured Man-Wolf. Issue 37 also had a September 1975 cover date. Coincidence? In Creatures on the Loose number 37, Man-Wolf was last seen in space with characters from a place called Other Realm, and they were hurtling towards the moon in a rocket ship. Now, in the last page of Marvel Team-Up number 37, Spider-Man wonders where Man-Wolf could have been transported from. And an editor's note references Creatures on the Loose 37 suggesting Von Stupp, plucked him from space. At that time, this continuity reference could have worked. However, in 1978, David Anthony Kraft and George Perez came together again to complete the story which they had started in Creatures on the Loose back in 1975, with a two-part conclusion in Marvel Premiere 45 and 46. And of course, Nigel is here referring to the Star God storyline. Classic George Perez art, his pre-DC years, and I loved every bit of it. But yeah, the story is wacky and almost makes no sense. Nigel says, the story picks up where Creatures on the Loose 37 have left off and Man-Wolf becomes Star God and defeats Arisen Turk before returning to Earth via a portal on a rooftop in New York, where he then becomes John Jameson again. So, happy ending. Von Stoop could not have acquired the Man-Wolf, though, as it was suggested at the time in Marvel Team-Up 37, which is true. So, you know, I think the larger editorship of Marvel that dropped the ball there. Also, Nigel says, I don't know if you guys noticed this. If you did, there was no mention of it, and this is all our fault. Yes, we should have mentioned this, Nigel. Nigel says, in all the panels where Man-Wolf appears during the team-up story, his Moonstone, which is the cause of his changes, appears to be completely absent. The only place it can be seen is on the cover to team-up number 37. And then Nigel wonders, is this our friend Vinny Coletta cutting corners again? Lol. And maybe this is a printing error in the complete collection paperback. I don't think so. I can't remember the Moonstone showing up in the original issues either, other than the cover. So Nigel, you're right there. They forgot the Moonstone in the interiors. And Billy and I completely also neglected to mention that. So thanks for pointing that out, Nigel. That is a massive error on their part. The Moonstone is what distinguishes the Man-Wolf from, let's say, Werewolf by Night. And of course, his coloring. But, you know, anyway, Nigel goes on to finish the email by saying, whilst this was no classic at all, I still enjoyed walking through it with you guys. Look forward to your second helping of Halloween Horror, which we've since given you, Nigel. I hope you like that, and we hope you can give us some feedback on our Halloween special 2021. And Nigel says goodbye then. So thanks for that email, Nigel. Always great to engage with you, man. You pointed out some very good, facts there. They couldn't have snatched Man-Wolf, von Stoop and his science cronies from space. Not at that time. It just doesn't make sense. And also the fact that the Moonstone is missing were things Billy and I completely passed over. We overlooked those. So thanks, Nigel, for pointing that out. Marvel, they did some gross errors. We just shouldn't point it out too, in a mean way to Marvel, because they might want to initiate a type of crisis on Infinite Earths event and Marvel to clean up continuity there. But I'm sure they won't do that just because, for Man-Wolf's sake. All right, Billy, that's it for another episode of Into the Weird. I had a lot of fun talking Doctor Strange with you once again. I can't imagine not having these, for me, Monday mornings, for you, Sunday nights, where we record and just, you know, have a lot of fun just reminiscing about our favorite Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah, it was nice to get back to the doc. It felt like a long time since we talked about him with, you know, the Halloween episodes and all that.
Yeah, well, we had two episodes in between talking about the doc the last time, so that's why we had this homesickness almost.
Yeah.
Feeling of, of homesickness and remorse, you know, like, oh, why didn't we get to talk about the doc during Halloween? I mean, he has a lot of horror-centric issues. We could have done a collection or something. Yeah. We probably should do that in the future, you know.
Yeah, we should.
Still got to talk Montese formula. That's definitely Halloween-related, storyline, if ever there was one, yeah. But with that, Billy, I'm going to say goodbye. Where can they find us before we do, though? Where can they find us on the interwebs, you specifically?
Yeah, look for me on Twitter, @BillyD_licious. That's where all, most of my main shenanigans and most of the time I spend there. And, you know, like you mentioned earlier with the Roy Thomas interview, @AllSquadron, look for us there as well.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm @IntoWeird, which is our account for this podcast. And then we've also got the @DarkLongBox, which is just my regular horror-centric account. I've also got a new Twitter account, which is Strange Enzymes, where I'm going to be blogging about Morbius, the Living Vampire. Yeah, that's something new on the horizon. I'm going to try to put out a daily blog post there. Not always very lengthy, just, you know, whatever strikes my fancy. But, you know, I've always wanted to blog full-time about Morbius, and I'm finally doing that. So check that out, listeners. And that'll be at www.strangeenzymes.wordpress.com. I'm also on Twitter at strangeenzymes, like I mentioned. And then, you know, we've got our Patreon, right, Billy, which is at www.patreon.com/intotheweird. And there we're doing our other shows, which are all for our patrons there. If you subscribe for $5 or the $10 tier, you get these shows, new shows, completely new every month. Dragons and Jive, House of Licensed Ideas, and Radio Free Hyboria. And, you know, for the $10 tier, you also get a care package after 3 months and your very own Bronze Age alter ego. So hopefully you guys will support us there. We'd really appreciate it, and that'll keep motivating us to provide better and better content. And, of course, check out our World on Fire Roy Thomas interview that we've recently released on there, and also our Star Rocket Radio show. But wow, that's basically it, Billy. It seems that every time we do Into the Weird, there's more and more things to mention. Sorry about that, listeners. Boring, I know, but yeah, indulge us, please. So with that, I'll leave you with a bit of message, listeners. Stay cool, stay frosty, stay weird, and then things should turn out just fine. All our weirdos should stick together, and until the entire world has become weird, and then nothing will be weird anymore, I guess, because we'll all be conformists. So hopefully that won't happen. But, you know, before that happens, I'm sure eternity will show up and, you know, destroy the earth. So hopefully that doesn't happen. Yeah. So take care of yourselves.
No.
Weirdos. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, everybody.